Now recording. We have, of course, been talking about Title VII and various forms of illegal discrimination under Title VII, and I told you that I was going to talk to you today about Griggs versus Duke Power, which established the extension or the increase in scope of the concept of illegal discrimination. And as you remember, illegal discrimination is treating somebody, at least from the original definition, treating somebody unequally because they are a member of a protected group. So because of the fact that they're a protected group, they're not getting some resource from the company. The Griggs versus Duke Griggs versus Duke Power case established the concept of adverse impact, disparate impact, which is indirect, as I mentioned to you, and not necessarily intentional and group-based rather than one-to-one, and much more subtle, much more difficult to understand, and it'll take me a lot longer to explain it as well as longer for you to understand what we're talking about here. Okay, that being said, I think of which end to come at it from. I'll come at it from the obvious end at this point, which is to say, if you have a situation in which you are screening for a resource, which can be money, or it can be a job or a promotion or training or parking spot or whatever it might happen to be, and your selection tool disproportionately weighs against a protected group, and I mentioned too the idea of weightlifting, right, which would have an adverse impact on women, and that's the case, then you have committed adverse impact. However, howsomever, adverse impact isn't necessarily illegal if you can determine and show that the selection process that you use, lifting weights or whatever it might happen to be, yes, has an adverse impact, but it's acceptable under interpretation of the law because you can demonstrate that that selection test is what?
Necessary.
Pardon?
Necessary.
Necessary for what?
For the job. For completing the job.
Right. So it's a job-related requirement. So a job-related requirement, which might be lifting, for example. So in an adverse impact situation, we have a situation in the same situation as adverse treatment, where a company is hurting a protected group in the allocation of a resource. In and of itself, you may not, and I want you to understand this subtly here, you may not say that adverse treatment or adverse impact alone is illegal. Why is adverse treatment not necessarily illegal? Why is adverse impact not necessarily illegal? You can show that it exists. Why would it not be illegal if it exists, possibly?
Because it's not intentional?
Because, no. Because why? It's a job necessity, which is to say, under adverse treatment, a BFOQ, or under adverse impact, a job-related requirement. So we have it. Now we have to show whether it's illegal. It's a two-step process. We have it. We have to show if it's illegal. And BFOQ allows you to skip the illegal aspect of adverse treatment. Job relatedness allows you to skip the illegal aspect of adverse impact. So just because it exists doesn't necessarily mean that it's illegal. So be careful there. Okay. The case that established this is worth noting. You know it's Griggs versus Duke Power, but let me show you what the situation was. That's not very exciting, is it? Lumen gain, zero. So this is Griggs v. Duke Power. Here's Duke Power at the time,
in terms of pole handler, job, and manager of coal handling job.
Okay, so you here you had blacks and whites doing this job. And the promotion at the time was basically due to a manager's recommendation of a person from this group. So the manager would say, this person has been doing a good job, so I would encourage them to be promoted, and then the person would be promoted. And you can imagine how the racial makeup looked of the managers, which was to say, unlike the New Zealand rugby team, they were, what's the New Zealand rugby team?
All Blacks.
All Blacks. Therefore, unlike them, this group was, can anybody give me the opposite of all Black?
All
it
white.
Was the all white team, yes. Exactly. So this is all whites. All right. So I have to wear my, I have an all black shirt. It's because they originally wore all black. And so when they went touring in England, they got that name. Okay. And if you were to ask how this decision on promotion was made, it ended up seemingly to give whites all the managerial positions, so to speak. It was totally unanchored in anything. It's just who you thought was doing a good job, which could mean practically anything. So, in court, where we ended up because an individual by the name of Willie Griggs sought a promotion here. He was African American, was turned down for the job. He'd gotten good performance appraisals. He'd been there 10 years or some such. And he was turned down. The company had instituted a new selection process as Willie's applying. And that was a high school diploma and an IQ test. Willie, not only had he been doing a good job, but did fine on the IQ test for promotion, but was turned down because he didn't have a high school diploma. And Duke Power said that the high school diploma was an important consideration, they had decided, for promotion to the managerial position. Well, Willie Griggs was upset about this, as you might imagine, applied to the ACLU for help with this particular situation, and they ended up in court, and they ended up, well, they started off in district, and then they went to appeals, and then they went to the Supreme Court. So we ended up in the Supreme Court with this particular case because it was extremely important. And in that particular trial, we came up with this new definition of what adverse impact was plus what illegal adverse impact was. But in this case, they were looking at whether this high school diploma was an important consideration for the job. And the ACLU pointed out this. First of all, in the state of North Carolina, right, we had black high school graduation rates, so I'll put here grad rate, and this was white high school graduation rate, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but let's just say this was in the 1970s, so this might have been something like 50%, and this was something like 70%. I'm just guessing. So, the ACLU said, look, this test, this high school diploma test requirement for promotion to manager is going to cause, fill in the blank, say? Adverse impact against African Americans because they have a lower graduation rate from high school. So right off the bat, we're seeing a lower graduation rate. Therefore, decisions made on this are going to have an adverse impact. Well, is that illegal?
No.
Not yet it isn't, until we show what?
A black who does something?
Pardon?
That's not required for the job.
It's not really required for the job, or it is required for the job. We need to know, right? They have it in here under the assumption that the high school diploma is important, right? But they've never proven that it's important. Okay, so right off the bat, we have a discussion here as to whether or not the high school diploma is a requirement for doing this particular job. Well, how would you go about proving whether or not the high school diploma was a requirement for this job?
Look up past people that had held that position and see if they had a diploma.
I like the idea. And even since this is a new regulation, we can figure that a lot of the managers in here either do or don't have high school diplomas, since this high school diploma requirement with the IQ test is new. Right? Yes, Dr. Fox, you're right as always. Okay, so what we have here then is a perfect statistical comparison that can be made. And how was it to be made? We are going to look at the We're going to look at the black-white comparison of job performance, right? And how are you going to do that? By using what? What do we have that measures an employee's job performance?
Performance review or job analysis?
Performance appraisal, right. Performance review would be okay, too. So we were to look at, then, the average rating of performance appraisal, right, over black and, over high school versus, we already know that the black and white difference is there because of the statistics of the state, but we also know that the high school versus no high school, I guess. And we will compare the performance appraisal. So these are two groups, with and without, without high school diploma. And we'll take a look at their performance appraisals to see if there is a, fill in the word,
difference.
And specifically, since we're doing a statistical analysis, we would want to see if there was a significant, thank you, difference between these two groups vis-a-vis their performance appraisal. And since we already know that this is on the books, what did the court find?
There was not
a difference between those with high school diploma and those without high school diploma. And therefore, the court said that using the high school diploma for a screening methodology already demonstrates the fact that it has adverse impact, so the high school requirement is, pardon? Fill it all out for me. Is
indirect
illegal? Illegal? What kind of discrimination?
Indirect.
Illegal.
Adverse
impact. Okay. So it's illegal adverse impact under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, if we were to spell it all out in legalese. Illegal because it's having adverse impact against a protected group. All right. The next question is really one that helps you sort of understand the view of the law here. If they were using, if they were using a color of shirt to distinguish between one group and another, it would be, fill in the word, the S word. Did somebody just say it?
Oh, stupid.
Thank you. That would be stupid because it wouldn't be job-related, but would the government care? Can you be stupid in your selection process? Does the government care?
Yeah.
So, like, how do you know, some, I know a lot of people, like, it discriminates against, and this is even happening in the service, tattoo policy. Like, you know, in Vietnam, you'd see people that have, like, whole...
Visual tattoos, particularly.
Yeah, have, like,
and I have kids write papers on this very topic.
Okay.
Often. Visual tattoos, what do you think? Should a company be able to discriminate based on visual tattoos? It's a good realistic example.
Honestly, yeah.
Is there, first of all, is there adverse impact? Do women have visual tattoos and men have more or less visual tattoos, or is it about even, or don't you know? I'm guessing about even. I don't really know that, but there's a hell of a lot of butterflies flitting around here on the various shoulders of young ladies I see. And ivy and whatnot on the arms of guys I see. And so, hey, by the way, if you're going to get a tattoo, I recommend for the guys, or even the gals, around your arms, instead of that ivy. You know, people put ivy. Stupid. Do something different. Job analysis. Cornerstone of HR. Right there on your arm.
The tattoo.
Do you think people ask you about it? Conversation starter? Oh, you had Dr. Fox, and he drum-beated that into your head, didn't he? Yes. I'm just telling you. I'm just trying to help you out socially here. And a tattoo that says that is going to attract attention, right? Conversation, you know? So I don't really know if women have more tattoos than men or less, or I just don't know, especially visual tattoos. Then the question is, if they... Let's say there's no difference. Then the government doesn't care because there's no adverse impact against a protected group. Let's say that there is adverse impact. Could the company prove that its no visual tattoos has a business reality? In other words, is it anchored in the job? What do you think?
I think so.
Could they show it? And they would show it to the degree you would say that visual tattoos are job related because
some people would not want to associate with people like that if they're discriminatory.
In other words, you'd say the customer preference.
Yeah.
Right? And what I've already told you about customer preference, by the way.
It's important for jobs.
It's actually not important to the job, particularly race, creed, color, national origin. Now just a second on the tattoos. Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of situations where it's like
there's cases on this. There's medical problems that make people really smell bad, right? And so they have to basically soak their clothes in Febreze every 15 minutes and when they come on the job. This is actually a serious problem, and it's essentially a disability, right, under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Under the ADA, we have a protection for people who have disabilities, and smelling bad would be, amazingly enough, a disability. Now the question is it job related? Depends on the nature of the job, right? If you're down there digging a well all by yourself at the bottom, probably not an issue. But if you're working in an office setting, could be an issue. And if you're working in a public situation, could also be a situation. But back to the tattoos here for a second. Are visual tattoos detrimental to a company doing business? They can be. They may not be. It's hard to say. You would have to actually prove that they were detrimental if you were going to use them for a selection policy. I mean, if you guys go to a bar and the bartender has a tattoo on his hand, does this make you stand up and say, I can't possibly get a beer in here, even though they're serving Highland Brewery's Black Mocha Stout, my very favorite at this point, when you consider price as well as goodness. I'm not drinking Black Mocha Stout here because I can't stand a tattoo on the back of the bartender's hand. Does that happen?
No, but it could in church.
I don't know about churches. I just don't know. It's been a while since I talked to somebody about this. I don't know. Our family's Quaker, and the Quakers put up with everything. They don't care. As long as you're not violent, they're happy. Whatever. So, my point is, if you're going to discriminate, and it looks like it has adverse impact, you're going to have to determine if it is not related to doing the job for the company. And, therefore, you should be very careful about what you do use to screen people out of a job. Because there's potential for it to have whatever you're using might have adverse impact. For example, you might say, I can't imagine ever hiring somebody who went to Clemson. Jesus, gotta go to, if you can't go to college, go to Clemson. You know, I just can't see it. You know, it's just ridiculous. Well, is this going to have an adverse impact against whatever? Race, creed, color, national origin, or gender? I just don't know the answer there. But if you're going to have those kinds of policies, you would need to investigate that to determine whether or not you have adverse impact.
What about, like, you feel like a children's store?
We love children's stores, especially when we have little Frankie with us. We take her and she chews everything and puts it back on the shelf. Boxes, you know, it doesn't matter if it's in a box or not, it's still totally chewable. Anyway, so you're proposing that mostly we have women here and less men.
Well, I just feel like some places, like if it's a retail store for children, that you can't have digital facial piercings. Like, they ask you to not have that.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not again, I'm not sure what the status is in terms of adverse impact. And what does facial mean? I mean, women have a lot of head piercings, i.e. their ears, right? It has to move off of your ear onto your cheek and toward your nose. So big plates in your nose, those big round plates like this, that's not acceptable, perhaps. I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about this. Would it bother me to see a young woman with some sort of, I don't know, fish hook anchored in her nose? I don't know. Would it, I don't know, you potential mothers, what do you think? Would it bother you? Do you work in one of those stores?
No, but I work in retail in general.
I've been.
And what do you think?
You couldn't have any on your face. You can have ears, that was it.
Yeah,
no piercings.
They said that
no fish hooks and nose.
They made me take it out as they came in.
Boy, that might be painful with a fish hook.
Well, because it's an incident in children, and people don't want their children exposed to things like that.
So all of a sudden, the kid's never going to be exposed to people
well,
with things stuck in their nose.
When they're younger, it's the parents' job to protect them.
Protect them. Oh, don't look. They have a fish hook in their nose, dear.
No, but it does influence the environment of the store. If you have a target market that is very, like, Puritan about themselves and clean, then your employees would want to reflect that.
My point would be, if there's adverse impact, you have to show. I'd already wonder about that. Do they hire men that apply there?
No, not really.
There were never any men out there?
But we didn't sell boys anything.
Well, then that makes sense.
Still, I don't know. Right on the edge on these things. If I was a company, I would very much attempt not to even come close to an adverse impact claim. But I don't know about whether or not men ever even apply to work at these children's stores. Probably some weirdos do. But who's to say that the women aren't weirdos? Oh, you exclusion, of course, right? That some of the women that apply aren't weird. Who knows? Anyway. All right, so what we're looking at here is you guys in business being careful about what you do. First of all, you may be losing somebody who's qualified, but secondly, you might be losing someone who would instigate some sort of adverse impact claim. And I don't know the answers, but I have a feeling that tattoos are about equally distributed, so there wouldn't be a claim there. And I'm not sure whether or not you could prove that they were job-related or not in most work environments. Yeah.
It's kind of like because people are visual creatures. For instance, say I was in an accident, and I had a scar down here, and I had a milky eye. Somebody's saying, oh, they got a fight, even mean something.
Right, right, right. I think that's true. We are visual. And what are the things that we're afraid of? From an OB point of view, this is an OB discussion, but what are we, in terms of visual, what are we afraid of?
The difference.
The difference, exactly. Thank you. the difference between me and you. If you guys never saw that Twilight Zone, do you remember, you ever see the Twilight Zone with the guy's having an operation on his face? And all you do is you see behind him and the doctor's working on his face, and he's got his face all covered with bandages. They take it off, and they all go scream. They all scream and say, it didn't work, it didn't work. And the guy turns around, his face is totally normal, like yours and mine, and comes up to the doctors, and the doctors are all weirded out with ears growing out of their noses and whatnot, right? But that's what they're used to, right? That's what they expect. So it's the differences that they're afraid of. And if somebody with a milky eye, which could be caused by an accident, would be a difference that would be scary. And why do we have that fear of differences? Because back in the old days when we were all Neanderthals and before that even, people that were different killed us. And then we weren't alive to worry about it anymore. And eventually all the people who were afraid were still alive, and all the people that walked over and said, hey, let's be friends, but don't stab me, oh, too late, it was an issue. They were all dead. All of us friendly guys were dead. So that's why we have that in our genetic makeup. Right? Why are we afraid of tigers, etc.? The ones that weren't afraid became tiger pellets. Okay, so in terms of this particular discussion, I just want you to be sure you remember that adverse impact has a possible job relatedness, which is okay, not job-related is not good. The government only gets involved, if there seems to be an adverse impact against a protected group. If you have an adverse impact and it's against people from Clemson, right, I don't think anybody cares because there's not going to be a protected group involved there. So, you can do lots of stupid things from the point of view of hiring people that don't have adverse impact and certainly don't help you get the best people. I mean, you hear all kinds of things. We took the candidate out for dinner, and the candidate put salt on his or her food before testing it. So we didn't hire him. He's impulsive, and he's not careful, and blah, blah, so we didn't hire him. I mean, that's just a capital S stupid, right? So adverse impact then becomes a lot trickier to deal with. It's how you use the available employees that you might be able to get, and if you're using them in a way that's illegally discriminatory because of adverse impact. Adverse treatment's easy. I'm not hiring you because you're a woman or because you're African American or because you're whatever. If that's a protected group, then there's an issue.
Is this only gender or creed, or is it other one, the other two also?
This applies to the same five groupings. Adverse impact applies to protected groups, race, creed, color, national origin, and gender. So if you have a policy that hurts one of those groups, you need to be able to show that it's job-related if it hurts a protected group. I may have mentioned to you that for a while they talked to you about policemen and the height of policemen for a while. You know, he had to be 5'10", which obviously had an adverse impact against a lot of women. So eventually they scrapped that. And same was true with flight attendants and the like. He thought that women had to be flight attendants so the business people would be happy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All that was not job-related. And so was not seen to be a VFOQ or job-related, and so was thrown out by the courts. So as we move into the topic about selection, and we still have the other laws to cover yet, but they'll be pertinent to all of this, as we move into to this idea of selecting employees out of the relevant labor market, we're going to have to be aware of potential for illegal discrimination because of our inability to look for talent across a wide applicant pool. And instead, we use easy things like, it's a job for a male, right? We all know that forklift drivers have to wear suspenders and smoke cigars. So all forklift drivers will have to be males. Just they have to do those things. Those are forklift traits, etc. It's easy things, right? It's the easy way of making decisions. Throw this person out, throw this person out, throw this person out. Please, I don't want to have to think too hard about who could actually do the job and make that decision based on data, per se. All right. So a couple points then out of all of this again.
it will be illegal, whether it is against a protected group or it is a non-job related.
If it's against a protected group, you have to be able to show that it's job related. If you can't show that it's job related, then it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's against a protected group, and it turns out that that's a legitimate job requirement, a good job requirement, then it becomes legal.
Yeah. It's basically just like prove it.
Prove it.
Yeah.
Prove it that you have to use that to distinguish. That it's job-related. Well, should a company use, I'm asking you, should a company use non-job-related criteria to not hire people? What's the answer?
No.
No, clearly no. Does it happen that companies use non-job-related criteria to hire people, yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes. We hired him because he went to Princeton, right? So he had to be good, et cetera. So what we're looking at here is this idea that companies do this all the time. The government really doesn't care if you do it, unless it impacts a protected group. If you want to be stupid, that's up to you. It's only a concern the shareholders might have. But if it has adverse impact against a protected group, which is a citizen of this country, then the government becomes concerned, the EOC becomes concerned. Okay, everybody follow this? It's important to straighten this out in your brains because this will be heavily discussed on our next, on our first test. Yeah. Guys are ready for a good question, but that's all right. Okay, so that's Title VII pretty much in a nutshell. Now, you might ask yourself, how do they determine whether or not there's adverse impact? What do you think that means? How would I know that a disproportionate number of protected group people were being excluded from an asset that the company is giving out, a job or money or whatever? What would you say? If you were saying, let's say there's 100 people and 49, 51, this is men, this is women. Is there adverse impact there?
No.
Not really, not statistically significant. At what point does the court actually name it as adverse impact? Well, how about 40, 60?
Or
33?
80%. Who said that? Where did she come up with that? It is indeed 80%, which is to say 20 women were hired, 80 men were hired out of 100 for 100. That's now the legal definition of adverse impact. Now, quite often, you're not necessarily going to allocate between 100. But if it's 10 or if it's 3 or if it's 5,000 or whatever, you do the appropriate division and decide whether or not you have created adverse impact, then you want to ask yourself, is this adverse impact actually related to the job?
So let's
take a look at how this is done. But I want you to have in mind this idea of 80%, which is, by the way, known as the four-fifths rule, as you might imagine, 80% being four-fifths. I'll just say number, men, hired divided by number of men applied, number of women hired, number of women applied. And that's the way it's calculated. So it's a hiring rate, effectively. Let's just do one. I'm going to make it up, so it may not come out, but we'll get a number and we'll see whether or not they were acting illegally. They apply a selection process to the number of women who were hired. they hired 20 women, and let's say 50 applied, let me make it too hard, 40 applied. And of men, let's just say 100 applied, and 70 were hired. Okay, do the math, please.
So this is what? This equals 0.5.
And let's switch this around. Number of men hired. I'm sorry, we're switching it around just to make it easier. There. This is the number of people who were hired. Stupid. This is applied. You can tell I'm thinking about my granddaughter more than I'm in this class. So what we have here is 0.7, right? So we have 0.7 and 0.5. Which means what? If you were to divide that, what do you get?
0.714.
Yes, well, obviously under 56, which, because there's not 56 up there, there's a 5, so it's going to be under 0.8, right? Therefore, does adverse impact exist? Is it less than 80%? It comes out to what did you tell me? So this whole thing divided out equals 0.71. Is that less than 8.8?
Yeah.
Therefore?
It's not adverse discrimination.
Therefore, it is adverse, because the selection rate is below the cutoff, which is 80%. So it's a very straightforward calculation to boil this difference down to see whether or not the company has hired in such a way as to create adverse impact against a protected group, in this case, women. Because what we're looking for is this number to be greater than 0.8. And at this point, it's not greater than 0.8. It's 0.5 divided by 0.7.
When the number is greater than 0.8, it's not.
Then it's not adverse impact. In fact, it can go all the way up to 1.2 before it's considered reverse adverse impact, except that, not that way you'd be favoring women at that height. All right, so that, yeah.
Yeah, if you are in an illegal case that you hire the 80% men, in America, government is going to ask you something? Or
the EEOC will listen to a complaint by someone who says, I got turned down from a job for which I was qualified, but they only seem to want men. And so the EEOC, that's the agency I mentioned, is the agency that oversees this, would then do an investigation of these kinds of numbers and determine whether the person is correct. And if they is correct, they'll say to the company, you're doing something wrong, this is wrong. You know, change your policy. The company says, oh, no, I'm not doing it wrong. And then they'd end up in court.
Now, what about if the men were much more qualified to hire the women? Would this calculation still be in effect?
If, let's say, the men were much more qualified because they all had a certain height, let's say, and a certain height was required to run the machinery. The on-off switches were up high, or you had to lift a certain amount of weight or whatever. What's your opinion? Is that now job-related and therefore making this acceptable?
That's job-related?
Yeah, it's job-related. If it is job-related.
What do you call that 0.8 rule? What is the name for that?
Four-fifths rule. It's the rule that determines whether or not adverse impact is in place or not.
Okay.
And if it's under 0.8 when you do this calculation, then we have a situation where adverse impact appears to exist. Now, is it illegal? Maybe, maybe not. We have to show whether or not it's job-related.
So it's called selection rate or something? I'm trying to think of what to call that.
Call it a selection rate.
All right.
The selection rate for women is more than four-fifths, well, would violate the four-fifths rule, would be a good way of saying it. Okay, so this is strictly a number situation. Have ever any of you filled out applications for a job and they send you a follow-up questionnaire asking about your race, age, all that kind of stuff. Have you had that happen yet?
Yeah. So it's better for you to check the email.
Until you show up on the job dressed like Tootsie in the movie, right?
Well, hi, I'm here.
Right. Yeah. So what we're looking at here is the government asking for data about the people that you have solicited for a job. So they gather up all this paperwork, the company does, and then when the government says you may have adversely impacted a group, they pull out all the paperwork and show the number of people that applied and the number of people that they hired, et cetera, from the various groups to determine whether or not there appears to have been adverse impact. So they gather that data in order to establish these kinds of comparative statistics, interestingly enough. All right, so what I'm doing here is skipping over the whole court process. But from an adverse impact point of view, basically it comes down to numbers. I'm leaving off one other way of investigating adverse impact. Okay, in terms of adverse treatment, now, one-to-one intentional discrimination, let's talk about what's going to prove adverse treatment. Well, what would you say would be the process by which you could prove that you were adversely treated when you applied for a job? You were denied a resource, right? How would you think to prove this? It's only one-to-one now, not a group-based thing. So you have to prove it on your particular application process. The courts are looking for what's known as a standard four-step process, demonstrating that it looks like a prima facie case of adverse treatment. What would it be? You would apply, right? You would be of some protected group, whatever it might happen to be. Did you get the job or you didn't get the job? You're complaining, after all. Therefore, you did not get the job, correct. The company is going to say you did not get the job because you are
not qualified.
You're going to say, what a bunch of hooey, I am qualified. Okay, so you claim to be qualified for the job. The company goes ahead and hires someone else who is not what?
Qualified.
Not of your protected group, right? So you got turned down because you were a woman, so consequently, you're going to have a hell of a time if the person that they did hire is also a woman. Do you see my point? So from an adverse treatment case, a one-to-one intentional discrimination, you have to be able to show that the person that was hired could have been equally qualified but was of another gender in that case, or another race or another disability or whatever. So in an adverse treatment claim, you're looking at intentional one-to-one based on protected group. And qualifications had nothing to do with it. I was qualified. I didn't get the job, and they hired somebody else who was of the other half of my protected group. I call it protected group subgroup. So you're a woman. You were qualified, and you were X. But the next applicant was male. Right? And they got the job, they were qualified too. But they got the job, so this is a big check. See? Check. No, it's not crossing. Okay, and this is what you would have to show if you were going to proceed with your claim. This would not allow you to proceed because they hired a woman. You said you were discriminated against because you're a woman, yet they hired a woman, so that's not going to be a very good support for your claim. Of course, what's the company going to say on this bottom one here? They're going to say, we didn't hire you, we hired someone who was more qualified, right? So then it becomes an argument over qualifications, et cetera. And eventually, they come up with some decision. Okay.
Can you please explain more more detail the difference between adverse impact and adverse treatment.
Adverse treatment, now remember, is one-to-one. I'm not hiring you because you're a woman. I don't want to hire any women. That's adverse treatment. I'm not hiring anyone who can't lift 200 pounds over their head. Who's going to get hurt there? Women are going to be hurt there, but it's not direct. It's indirect. Do you see?
So adverse impact is indirect?
Correct. I want people who take this job to be able to lift 200 pounds. Okay, you could get the job, but I sure as hell couldn't. Go ahead.
It seems like with all the disclaimers that's put out for idiots and all the lawsuits that companies have, how do they stay in business? They just have that good voice?
That's a damn good question. You know, these people have been getting away with this for years. My belief is they get away with it because people don't complain. I think that people are afraid to, I think the average applicant is afraid to complain. They don't want to get involved in a lawsuit. They say, oh, well, people will think that I'm causing too much trouble and I'll never get a job if I cause trouble, you know, that kind of stuff. So by and large, most of the time that this happens never gets pursued in court or even through the EEOC before court. So it's a really interesting question. It'd be a good study. Why are claims not pursued?
Or maybe they close them.
Pardon?
Maybe they close them privately. They don't bring it into court.
I think it's possible,
yeah,
but it's really court is like the last resort. Before that, the EEOC tries to solve it with what's known as reconciliation. Give the person the job, you know, blah, blah, blah. Let's clear this all up. Nobody wants to go to court. But in reality, quite often people want to go to court because they figure they can get more money out of it.
Right.
Employees. Well, there's your product liability stuff. Jody's, my wife's dad used to talk about the guy that sued the lawnmower, the rotary, you know, rotary lawnmower, the blade spins around like this. He sued the rotary lawnmower company that made this, whoever it was, because there was no sign on it saying, do not pick this up to trim the top of your hedges. So this guy and his buddy stuck his hands underneath to pick the thing up, and guess what happened? He got an extreme nail makeover.
Do you have to do the stupid thing, though, to sue him, or do you just sue him because there's not a sign there?
That's a good question.
This case, the guy collected.
Yeah.
Because there was no stupid sign there.
Like,
oh, don't get me started on that, because in this case, you're wrong. People are wrong. Yes, yes, yes. Do you want to hear the whole story, or are you just happy with the half the story?
We'll go for the whole story.
The whole story is that she pulled in for this coffee and indeed burned herself on her legs. She went to the doctor patched her up, and the bill was like $700 or something, whatever. And she said to McDonald's, why don't you pay this for me, because you gave it to me in a crappy carton, it sort of fell apart, one of those square things with all the holes in it, and she has to sort of hold it and fold it in the center or whatever and dumped it on her. McDonald's said, take a hike, lady, we're not interested in helping you. She said, well, it's not only $700, and they said, get bent, basically, and she went off and got herself a lawyer, right? And the lawyer said, you know, she just wants to have her hospitalization paid and now my fees on top of that. So we're talking $1,500. McDonald's says, get bent for both of you. So off they go to yet another court, on and on and on until it reached whatever it reached, $500,000 or something, a lot of money. At least it sounded like a lot of money, and she collected it, and everybody goes, oh, for a burned leg and a coffee, $500,000. The reality is that circulating memos, McDonald's said, we don't care. The advertising for our coffee is well worth more than $500,000. Now everybody knows that we sell hot coffee in the morning. If you want hot coffee, you come to McDonald's. And the amount that they paid was less than the coffee profits for one day out of McDonald's.
Oh,
how did it burn you? Right. So they got good PR, and the cost
really
to them was nothing. Less than one day's profit in coffee alone. So there was no cost to them. But they made made a huge deal out of it without telling people the full story. Typically, they want you to react a certain, the news media wants you to react a certain way, and so they tell you the story, part of the story that gets you to react that way. It's just totally normal. Should we declare war on somebody? Well, here's half the story, right? And everybody says, let's go kill them all, they're a bunch of ragheads, or whatever, right? So off they run to do this, and it turns out that the next ruler is the same way, or the next one after that. They're all the whatever. And eventually, maybe we'll wise up. For the time being, no. We'll be just as stupid as we ever were. All right, that's enough for today. Go home and digest all this stuff.